This is Dialogue. Dialogue, a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News.
This is Dialogue with May Bressel. Well, May, we've got quite a few things to talk about today. Bring us up on the news.
I wish we could go for hours. How about all day? An all-day session on assassinations?
You had about 10 hours worth with you today, didn't you?
With me, yeah.
Well, we'll do an hour of it and then see what we do from there.
Very good.
Let's start off with what's been happening in New Orleans and with the Panthers in relationship to Jim Garrison.
Oh, yes. For the people who haven't listened to the show before, Gloria, maybe we should explain the title of the show. The news service is Dialogue Assassinations. And what we're covering each week is newspaper articles that come out in the week since we met last that pertain to the political assassinations in the United States. For 7 years, you know, I've researched the political assassinations in this country. And all along the way, people said, this is a dead issue, and they'll never open the archives, and will you really know who killed John Kennedy? And I believed it would come to a point. And remember how we discussed it in our newspaper. Every day, almost every day, there is an article pertaining to the death of Robert Kennedy or the accident at Chappaquiddick or John Kennedy's death and the assassination researchers. So for those who haven't listened before, the title Dialogue Assassination means that we'll take the news each week, and we'll discuss it since we met last week, and it will pertain to things that you can look up for yourself. You see, I don't want to convince you about the conspiracies. I want you to read your newspapers, and so you can read today's paper or go to the library for this week's and check out what we're saying and read it differently. So we'll go on with the news, right?
Okay.
And before we go on, I asked everyone last week to get a pencil and paper. Make it a habit to get a pencil and paper and write down. I'm going to give some article titles and names, or I'll throw out book names. And I want you to read these things yourself. Just I'll throw them to you, what's in the news, what's coming out, and go to the library and look these things up, or buy the books. That's better. And so get your pencil and paper, and we'll get started. Now, this morning, not apropos of the political assassinations, but because it brings in District Attorney Jim Garrison in New Orleans, the Panthers in the prison, the jails in New Orleans, had a riot, and they had a list of 10 things which they demanded to change the system. The rats are biting them, and they're being treated unfairly, and the trials take too long. And they have a overcrowded prison condition, and the bail requirements are stiff, and they want to end the brutality. But among the list of 10 things they want is the removal of Jim Garrison as district attorney. And so all the people that know I'm working on the research of the assassinations, whenever they want to put you down, they say, uh-huh, see, there's Jim Garrison down there, and what's wrong with your friend Jim? You know, everybody wants him out. So what's with Jim? They notice the negative, not the good, where the federal government steps in and stops his trial or won't allow his witnesses to be called, and where they harass him all along the way. That's in the news, too. But people don't notice it. But now, tied in with all the prison demands, I think this is the first time that a prison group have demanded the removal of somebody like that. And I think
Why would they want Jim Garrison removed instead of, like, the people that run the prisons?
The chief of police.
The chief of police.
Or the head detective,
right,
who pulls them in and harasses them and uses false evidence to lock them up. Well, that's an interesting thing. The Panthers are a group of young men. They're the younger blacks, and most of the prison population are young anyway. And Jim Garrison, I could bring next week the articles on Jim Garrison's background. He was the first district attorney in the whole South to use blacks on the jury system, and he has been criticized and put down by the white community in New Orleans, particularly because he is so pro-black. And this is just a question of propaganda in the prison system. Somebody fed them this. Like, they say, we want more food, or we don't want to be chained to the steps, and they would yell, well, tell Jim Garrison about it. This is about what happened, I imagine. I want to get on bail, and they say, well, tell Jim Garrison. So he isn't the chief of police or the prosecutor. Somebody is telling them to put in, if they have 9 legitimate complaints, throw in Jim Garrison.
Another one.
So that's one way to get at him, because the Panthers have no knowledge of Jim Garrison's position. So when we talk about assassinations, this is part of the federal government harassment. I'm sure that somebody had to tell them to do it. So if you read your paper and you see that Garrison's put down by the Panthers, it has nothing to do with the validity of his research.
And it's too bad that they would use
every
the Panthers
snare.
Or,
that's right.
Or that the Panthers would allow them to use it.
They don't know. They've been told. It's just right. It's part of the dirty game.
Well, when you came in this morning, we had something that came over the wire that I called your attention to, but you were 3 steps ahead of me as usual.
Not always.
About Ted Kennedy saying that he would not run because there had been threats of assassination.
Yeah, well, the fear of assassination, the paper is running articles quoting an interview he has for Look magazine this week. And we've talked about Kennedy, and I want to talk more about the Kennedy family and their antagonism to the research. And today, if we have time, I'm going to talk about in relations to a new article in the Computer Magazine. But Ted Kennedy made this statement, the interview, and you'll all be reading it in Look or your paper last night. You saw it, that his 2 brothers were assassinated. And he said after the assassination of his 2 brothers and the death at Chappaquiddick, he owes something to his brother's children and his own children. Now, he refers to the death at Chappaquiddick and the assassination of his 2 brothers in the same sentence. And I know that the whole purpose of the Chappaquiddick incident, I've cross-filed it, researched it. Other researchers have newsletters coming out. Joe Jostein from Europe writes about it every month, sends it all over the world. And I've done extensive research on the Chappaquiddick. The whole purpose of framing, and we talked on this on the show once before, about I felt that that girl, Mary Capecchi, was dead in the back of the car and that Senator Kennedy was hit. And the intention wasn't to kill him, but it was to keep him from running in 1972. And he got the message. And he says, I will not, because of the 2 deaths of my brothers and the death of Chappaquiddick, I will not run. And I'm going to use a quotation just in case you don't take a look or read the news. He said, I feel in my gut it is the wrong time and it's too early. The mood may be changing again. I think it is, and I'm not sure that Nixon realizes that. Now, you play around with that. If Oswald did it alone, and if James Ray, was a lone assassin of Martin Luther King, and if Sirhan was a lone assassin of Robert Kennedy, it had nothing really to do with the times because the motive was supposed to be kind of an insanity. And he's saying that Mr. Nixon doesn't realize yet that the times they are changing. So I want to do one show with you, Gloria, on the reasons why I think, very heavy reasons, Ted Kennedy absolutely can't take it, the indications of who would be killing him and the motive and so forth. But he says here, absolutely not. He said, we don't even talk it over in our family. Now, we're going to talk about that at great length someday on the Chappaquiddick incident. But it did accomplish what it wanted to accomplish. They had to use one particular chick and kill her and frame him, and he got the message. And everybody, this is the thing that is so sad, is that everybody is expendable. I called Mrs. Kopechny shortly after the accident and spoke with her and explained why her daughter was killed on the telephone. And she said, why her only daughter? And I said, for the same reason that Officer Tippett was killed in Dallas. I said, they are pawns in the game. She had worked in a particular office of a senator. She had moved up the line. She had infiltrated. She was used. And Officer Tippett knew Lee Oswald. He was sent into the Oak Cliff section. Lee Oswald was leaning on the windowsill of his car talking with him. There was no confrontation. And Lee pulled back, and a car came, and 2 men. It was a shoot and a getaway thing. And they had to have an excuse to arrest Lee Oswald. He had no reason. He was arrested for killing Tippett. He went on to the movie, which was where he was supposed to be. But Tippett had to be killed, unknown to Tippett. He was sent into that area, and he was killed. So they would have an excuse to get Oswald and put him into the jail. they had to have a suspect so that the real assassins could be taken out of town. So in this instance, they had to have something to scare Senator Kennedy. If he was killed, then somebody in the country might have said, the three Kennedys are assassinated. Now we have nothing to lose by going into this. I doubt if the people who should be doing this thing would even be morally that awake to do it. But they might have. Somebody might have thought it was funny. So this way, you say, well, he's with a chick, and maybe they were making it or something, so he's blackmailed. And you can pass off the whole thing. But he got the message, and I've saved every article about the Chappaquiddick, and the purpose was to keep him running against Richard Nixon in 72.
And it looks like it may have
they accomplished. They accomplished it. Yeah. That's right. See, he says very firm, we don't even talk about it. He wouldn't dare.
And it said, what else here, the last paragraph here that,
yeah, he says, I don't know. He says that President Nixon realizes the times are ready, but what I don't know is whether the national mood can swing back in so short a time, only 4 years, to the kind of leadership identified with the Kennedys. We haven't gone forward since John Kennedy was killed.
No, I don't feel so, but
our status in the world or the world opinion, I think this is one of the reasons for that huge gut mourning when he died all over the world, is that it was the first ray of hope to a younger generation that maybe wars would be outmoded and nuclear bombs wouldn't be tested in the air and the civil rights program would go ahead and maybe the young people would have a chance. He got along, we said once before, with Khrushchev and De Gaulle, and former, in quotes, enemies respected his integrity or his courage. And the real mourning was, everyone, I think, knew what they were losing. So now Ted Kennedy says they're not ready for this yet, after these 4 years. Mm.
So, shall we move right along?
Oh. This is the news of the week.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Also, you brought along an article that says, the heading on the article says, criminalist sues over Kennedy case charges. This is Dwayne Wolfer, right? He's going to sue
Barbara Blair.
$2 million suit against Barbara Blair. What's that all about?
Well, we've talked for 3 weeks, I think, on the lawsuits going in Los Angeles against the L.A. Police Department, Mary Yorty, Evel Younger, Mr. Chirac, through his attorney Godfrey Isaacs, has placed a suit saying that they're hiding a conspiracy in Los Angeles on the assassination of Robert Kennedy. And along with that, a female lawyer, Barbara Blair, asked that the appointment of Dwayne Wolfer to become head criminologist of Los Angeles be stopped because he tampers with evidence of prosecution in murder cases in Los Angeles. And specifically, she mentioned the Bobby Kennedy murder, where there were two weapons and two serial numbers, and the bullet, one of the bullets in Robert Kennedy, the fatal bullet, and two other bullets in witnesses in the Ambassador Hotel did not match the serial number that supposedly Sirhan had on his gun. And when they wanted that gun that matched those bullets, it had been thrown away by the Los Angeles Police Department. So Barbara Blair said, you can't have Mr. Wolfer promoted to head criminologist. Well, now Mr. Wolfer is suing Barbara Blair, but what he really names in the suit, he sues for $2 million, Barbara Warner Blair, the attorney, and other persons involved in her research. And he's had a press conference in which he said he's suing the unknowns.
15 of them.
15 unknowns. John Doe's. He's suing. He has the number 15 John Doe's, and he's going to sue them for $2 million because Mrs. Blair wouldn't take it upon herself, in quotes, this is, to defame a nationally respected ballistic expert. That he wants to smoke out which 15 of you have been working in the police department with my evidence. You know, it just will only cost them. Goodness knows what it'll be. Even if he can't win the suit, they have pegged the people that know what's happening in the Los Angeles Police Department. So he's placed the suit so the defendants, the John Does, have to come forward because she doesn't work in the Los Angeles Police Department, but she knows what's happening. So even if no money is transacted or paid back to him, these 15 people will be uncomfortable or threatened or jeopardized.
Said, yes,
he defends his work with the bullets. But the Los Angeles Police Department, no matter what he does, this suit doesn't mean beans, if you think it does, because, again, he wants to find out who is in on this material. The other suit against the Los Angeles Police Department, now the head of the court there says that four people handled the evidence, and another gentleman said 33 have handled it. And now Mr. Wolfer says 15 John Does are going to be accounting for giving Barbara Blair the information. And there's so much threat and intimidation and frightening, lives threatened and jobs threatened and children threatened, that 15 John Does may chicken out and Mr. Wolfer will become the criminologist of Los Angeles. But I doubt it. It's too heavy a case.
You really think that this will...
It's a smokescreen. Nothing can come of it. The gun's been thrown away.
Right.
And in other cases, too. So he.
Well, that in itself would constitute negligence.
A little bit.
Yes.
Imagine the bullet, fatal bullet in Robert
Kennedy. Gee, I lost the gun. Yeah.
Well, you know, I have a list, and again, we could do another hour on that, of evidence destroyed in the John Kennedy murder. And I haven't counted it up. When my research was completed, it's all in a book, and maybe it's 40 pieces of hard evidence that was destroyed. For example, just the whole car interior was airlifted from Dallas to Washington, where it was one night in the basement of the White House, and no FBI man photographed it or examined it for bullet holes or directions. The car that John Kennedy was in at the time of the assassination, as to question whether crossfire or bullet directions. And that car was taken from Washington to Michigan. It was airborne and taken and completely destroyed, the whole interior. Instead of putting in the Smithsonian Institute for any criminologist exam, the entire car was, the whole interior was destroyed right after the murder of Jackie. That was the big, then, you know, about 12 hours later, the lamppost in front of the book depository was removed, the street light, and you have pictures of the motorcade, and the lamppost is there. But then there were people in Dallas who went back the next afternoon, and the lamppost was completely destroyed. And then the street sign, Mr. Sapruder took pictures on the street, and the highway sign in front of the book depository was removed, and that was taken away. Well, we could go, if you want today, we could talk about 35 to 40 things that were destroyed. So it goes...
Not to mention the lives that have...
That's another day. But
gone down the drain.
The Huey Newton trial is going on up in Oakland, and Huey Newton said that he had in his hand a law book, and that he was shot, and there was blood all over the law book, and he wanted to use this as part of his defense, and that book was taken away and missing. Once you follow the evidence missing in one particular case to the nth degree, then you learn how to read the daily news. And this is a broadcast, and this is how you read the news. You learn that the important pieces of evidence, like a tape recording that Mr. Gary had, the lawyer for Huey Newton, was his files were completely lifted and taken away, and that evidence is gone. Of the man who originally... cleared Newton of involvement and later came back and said he was involved. So evidence is destroyed. And down in Los Angeles, the gun, what could be worse than, you know, even witness testimony can change, but the gun is gone. So I don't think that Mr. Wolfer's suit is going to go very far. Gary Powers and Lee Harvey Oswald, and I suppose if we save articles for years, we could document many more who could speak up. And so Powers this week is saying they promised me that I could go back in the Air Force, and I can't.
So now we come to Nation Magazine. And you asked me to read an article, but I didn't have time before
Bob read it this morning.
Bob read it.
I'll copy it for you.
I hope so.
Those people with pencils out there, Gloria, write down the title, The Nation, July 19th, 1971. I think you have to go to the library to see it. It's by subscription. It's a new issue that just came out, July 19th. If you want to write to them, it's 333 6th Avenue, New York City, New York. There is an article this month by Fred Cook titled Assassination Investigations: The Irregulars Take the Field. And the article is about Mr. Bernard Fensterwald, Jr. in Washington, D.C., a well-known attorney there who has taken on the investigation of the political assassinations. And we talked about Mr. Fensterwald, I was invited to be on that committee to investigate the assassinations. And the article explains why Mr. Fensterwald, a Washington attorney, had to go in, take this position, that when the Warren Report came out, that the official position was mostly indifference or lethargy, that people in Washington are too scared to go into the assassinations, and they wouldn't dare. And that everywhere in Washington, it permeates the air. Everyone's aware of it. It permeates it. They don't believe the Warren Report. And they won't go into the information. So that now Mr. Fensterwald has a committee. He's invited, well, there are 28 of us researchers in the United States. He'll take information from all over the country, but the serious researchers that have been on this 7 years, and take the facts and data, and it's being fed into the computer magazine, and we'll talk about the computer magazine again later today in every meeting. And what he's doing is he's putting under one tent the most responsible assassination researchers across the nation, and he'll put the facts and figures together and put them into a computer. And he felt that it was very necessary to go into this thing. And this, what it's called, the irregulars take the field, because he said that the news media tries to make you think that the kooks and the nuts are doing the research. And we talked about how they tried to smear us even last week in the San Francisco Chronicle. And he felt that somebody had to take this information and these facts under one roof and feed it into the computer. And this is the first time in the history of the United States that any private group of citizens have said, your facts don't mix, and we want to know who is keeping them from being told to the people, and what is the real truth. It would be like a grand jury having an investigation on something, and the public hearing the trial, knowing it's not true, and going into the evidence that the grand jury was supposed to go into, or any trial. This group, myself included, are saving the facts and information. And we're the only citizens in the United States that have questioned an official document and said, no, that isn't what it's supposed to be. And someday your resistance will break down. You're going to have to tell. Bud Fensterwald said in the article, my aim is to get all the responsible critics under this one tent. And he goes into his background. He went to Harvard University, cum laude. He has represented people all over the United States and done research in foreign policy and studied in England and has a very establishment background. And he gives a few reasons of evidence that are so flagrant that if you want to go to the library and read them, it will give. He goes into the James Ray case and the doubles, the Eric Starvo Gault and the Sneed, and he's the attorney now for James Ray, because James Ray has said there's a conspiracy. And at first Ray wouldn't talk to Bud, and he didn't trust him because the federal government had tampered with the case so badly and made Ray say that he was guilty. So now he trusts Bud Fensterwald, because it's a very important situation in this country where a lawyer comes to a client and says, if you say you're guilty, we'll save your skin. You know, you'll live. You won't get the death penalty. And you're not allowed to really tell what happened. The lawyer closes the case before it ever starts. So it's a really, if anybody is really serious about what I'm saying or about the assassination or want to know what's really happening in their world, it's an excellent article. It's only a sampling of, we could, you know, write for 100 years now, but it'll give you a background of what is really going on. And then he quotes certain people, establishment people. He's not taking any political view at all. The research on the assassinations is not Republican, Democrat, right-wing, left-wing. It's just facts. And that's why it's called the Irregulars Take the Field. And he has a quotation of Senator George Murphy in 1970, in September, when he was running for senator again, where he said in the San Francisco Bay that he had doubted the lone assassin solutions, that he didn't think that any lone assassin killed the Kennedy boys. And he thinks that somebody instigated these murders. This was Senator George Murphy. And then he quotes in the article Jesse Curry, the chief of police in Dallas. And he's not afraid to go where the chips fall. You'd think, well, if the Dallas police were involved, why ask the chief of police? Well, a book came out by Jesse Curry called The JFK Assassination File, which I have, and which you could get the library if you asked for it, in which Jesse Curry says, number one, that a paraffin test was taken of Oswald's face that did not reveal any nitrate from having fired a rifle, in which he said the main witness, Harold Brennan, the witness against Oswald, who was in front of the depository, constantly changed his story. And he's at number three, that the eyewitnesses saw two men on the sixth floor, and these were turned over, all the stories of two men on the sixth floor were turned over to the FBI, and this was never mentioned. The witnesses were never called. And then in conclusion to his book, Jesse Curry said, in quotes, "We don't have any proof that he, Oswald, fired the rifle. No one has been able positively to put him in the building with a gun in his hand." And Jesse Curry said, "I'd be very interested to know if you uncover additional evidence regarding a conspiracy." Now this, how, you know, the reason we're here every week now, Glory, is how does the federal government tell you that Oswald did, even the chief of police in Dallas, against the federal government, this book just came out a year ago, and he concludes this book, "We have no evidence that Oswald fired a rifle." He's challenging the Warren Commission right there. And the researchers, of course, we appreciate his honesty. We wish he had said something when the Warren Commission was working. But he's retired from the police force now, so he's in a position to talk. People's lives are threatened. Their jobs are threatened. We owe money with credit cards. We buy our homes on time, our cars on time. Everybody's vulnerable. They've got a job. And it's interesting that when he retired, he could write a book. And now he says that he has no proof Oswald fired anything. That's from the chief of police. You know, if people say, who is this person talking all this assassination talk? This must be some radical stirring trouble. I'm going to spend one session with you, 1 hour, on literature from the John Birch Society, American Opinion, which is the closest to the feelings of the assassination conspiracy of no other literature covers it as clearly as they do. And they know there was a military coup in 63. Medgar Evers writes about it every single month, almost. Something pertaining to the military coup of 63. So this mentions the quote of Curry, because even though it's in Nation magazine, a lot of people may say, oh, well, Nation, who reads Nation, or is that a communist blurb? It isn't. And he's quoting Senator Murphy and Chief of Police Curry in Dallas. So I would like you to go to the library and ask to read that issue. And Xerox, you people, you know, if you can't buy them on the stand, it's a 5-page article. Use a copying machine in the library and say, now I have something in my hands that may make me think something is happening in Washington, somebody's controlling our country or our lives or our taxes or our foreign policy that affects my life. Hold it in your hands and read it. And then when you read it, you get an opening. A door is open to a new way to see things.
I will read the article, May. Yeah, I hope you... Well, leave it for me or copy it for me. Or
I will. I'm really impressed with it, and it's a long thing. We could read someday some quotations. But I would like everyone who's listening to just, you know, if you spend your time listening to a show for 1 hour, just follow it up with something that you can hold and see and begin educating yourself to see things the way I see them, not just to believe everything I'm saying. The story of the doubles, of the Ray, and all the Oswald thing is so interesting. In just 4 pages, you can get a lot.
Will you be... You said that you had been invited to work on this. Will you be doing work? You'll be
with Bud Fensterwald?
Yes.
Oh, I do now. Yes. My research is going into the IBM machines in Washington and being coded. And I'm very friendly with Bud Fensterwald. And when his committee was formed, I was one that was invited immediately to be on it. And I'm happy because, you know, of a nation of how many million people, you know, to be one of 28 who's been asked to take a project out of my own moral feelings that the government had not told us the truth and wanting, not knowing where it was going to lead, whether it was going to be a communist, a left-wing conspiracy or from Russia, or a right-wing or an internal revolution in this country, a palace coup from the agencies in our country. I took the evidence wherever it went. And I'm very complimented to work with them, and I'm very glad to do it.
Well, you have, will they be using all of your data?
A lot of the research is invaluable because I just spent all of these years cross-filing names and dates and compiling newspaper articles, and they're putting street names and names of people and locations under witness testimony and FBI documents, and they'll be able to ask the computer, you know, many questions, and the answers are coming out. And they'll, not all of my work well, all of it could be coded, but it takes time. It costs thousands of dollars, you know, to get people to come out and code it. Mm-hmm. They're going to take do 1 week of just coding, and some is going off there now. I guess most of my research will all go off mm-hmm. to Washington, yes.
You have such interesting divisions in your...
The cross-filing system.
Cross-filing system.
If there is a class at MPC on research projects... recipes or garden things. There's a filing system for whatever your hobby is to put things in a classification where you have them that you can enjoy them and they're not just thrown in a drawer.
It's fascinating the way you have, but you have such clever titles. That's, I think that's...
Well, I made up a few, like the migratory birds.
Yeah,
my research on the John Kennedy assassination, I found that as they would call a witness in and say, they'd first get his name and his occupation and what do you do, and he would say, well, I was a certified public accountant, and how long have you lived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area? And he'd say, well, I moved in here in April of 63, and where do you live now? Well, I'm living in New Orleans, and where do you work? At Lockheed. And what were you doing in Dallas, Texas? Well, I was a garage mechanic. Or he went on to be actually a member of the Dallas Police Department. He was a certified accountant until April of 63 and was with this garage where a particular rifle was in exchange for automobile parts and service car repair, and it came from the home where Marina Oswald lived. And then this particular man went on to be a member of the Dallas Police Department after the assassination. And the man that took Lee Oswald to the depository, he moved into town in October 63. And then after the assassination, he moved across the street where Marina Oswald lived, and Lee was there on the weekends and so forth. And then he left town. And I saw a pattern of witnesses called in who moved in like a military operation. They came in March, April, and May of 63, and they left in November, December 63 to take other positions. And many of them went on to defense industries, into Lockheed and Boeing and so forth. And I had a title called Migratory Birds, which is everyone who was not established in that community 1, 2, 3 years ahead of when the assassination took place. People who came in just months before, did their job, split, and it became more than, I have a cross-filing of coincidences, it became more than a coincidence. It began that way that 2, 3 people came in and 4 came in and left. I put under coincidence. And then when you get 20 or 30, it becomes migratory birds. Some are pretty powerful birds, I have to tell you. They even have eagles on them. They're eagles. Those are my migratory birds.
I think we have time to go into the Computers and Automation magazine that you mentioned a little bit ago.
Oh, yes, we have two things I have to cover this week. Time is running out. One is that we mentioned at your library again, if they have it or ask for it, Computers and Automation. It's a marvelous magazine. It comes out of Newtonville, Massachusetts, 815 Washington Street, Route 3, Newtonville, Massachusetts, 02160, area code. If you're interested, subscribe and ask for the back issues for 1 year. It is the most impressive thing. It is a business magazine. It's a technical magazine. But when information on the political assassinations began to roll along, they did an article by a Mr. Sprague on the where the bullets were in the grassy knoll, where the gunman stood, as fed into the computer. And it came out with the researchers all over the country, the other ones who had not worked with the computer. So every month they have articles on the John Kennedy murder, Martin Luther King, the Sirhan case, the archives documents. And since we met last week, in my mail came the new issue, the July 71 issue, volume 20, number 7. And the title is The Central Intelligence Agency and the New York Times. And they go into the fact that on December 1st, 1970, the New York Times had a book review by John Leonard on Jim Garrison's book, The Heritage of Stone. And at the end of his book review, it concludes this way. The title says, Mysteries Persist. And Jack Leonard said, frankly, I prefer to believe that the Warren Commission did a poor job rather than a dishonest one. I like to think that Mr. Garrison invents monsters to explain incompetence. But until somebody explains why two autopsies came to two different conclusions about the president's wounds, why the limousine was washed out and rebuilt without investigation, why certain witnesses near the grassy knoll were never asked to testify, why we were eager to buy Oswald's brilliant marksmanship in split seconds, why no one went into Jack Ruby's relations with a staggering variety of people, why a loner like Oswald always had friends and could always get a passport, who can blame the garrison guerrillas for fantasizing? And Jack Leonard went on, something stinks about this whole affair. A Heritage of Stone rehashes the smelliness. The recipe is as unappetizing as our doubts about the official version of what happened. Would then Attorney General Robert Kennedy have endured his brother's murder in silence? Was John Kennedy quite so liberated from the Cold War cliches, he goes on, but the stench is there and clings to each of us. Why were Mr. Kennedy's neck organs not examined at Bethesda for evidence of a frontal shot? Why was his body whisked away to Washington before the legally required Texas inquest? This was the book review of Heritage of Stone, December 1, 1970. Now, in January 1971, 1 month later, John Leonard became the editor of the New York Times Book Review. He was only a reviewer in December. He became the editor. And he ran another book review of Jim Garrison's book in which he deletes this whole section about the mysteries persist. He cuts the whole thing off and rewrites in the Book of the Times. And he ends his review with, frankly, I prefer to believe the Warren Commission did a poor job rather than a dishonest one. And I like to think that Mr. Garrison invents monsters to explain the incompetence. So people working, researchers, that on the East Coast who were doing information on Jack Leonard went into the computer field and did a research of a congressional report of April 30, 69, and the sum of the computer magazine, I want to go into that report really briefly, the gist of the computer and automation thing is to go in the attitude of the New York Times in hiding the conspiracies of the Kennedys and why they had to quash that review and put out a new one. In case anybody didn't see that last sentence, they went out with a new review, and Mr. Leonard was promoted, coincidentally. And they, the computer people, went into the discussion of the background, the New York Times, with the political assassinations. And this article, if you don't get it, I will read it to you, but it ties in again with another day. The Congressional Record, April 30, 1969, has a title called Otto Otepka, Victim of a New Team, by the Honorable John Rarick of Louisiana. And he made the remarks that a long-suppressed report on the misuse of the CIA to establish an underground government within our government was exposed today in the Government Employees Exchange. Now, I don't have that article. It's called The Government's Employee Exchange, and it was a report of an underground government within our government that's been suppressed on the misuse of the CIA. And it talks about the plan of a new team in controlling the CIA operations to, in quote, reform the U.S. domestic and foreign relations through the use of the elite who look to the spirit of the future. Now, I have to, we have just a few more minutes, Gloria, and maybe we should talk about this next week, because the Soviet Union this week came out with a detailed article on the conspiracy behind the Pentagon Papers. And the very first time we met as a news broadcaster, you asked me in to describe the reason the New York Times was breaking the assassinations, not the assassination, the Pentagon Papers now, going against the Vietnam War sector of our country in relation to my assassination research. And the very first meeting which we had, which I want printed up, you know, and put in a book someday, talked about, remember, it was exchange of power in the United States. And I didn't use the word then that Daniel Ellsberg's act was a revolutionary act, but we said the name of the game is power, controlling the United States. And I felt that the reason the New York Times had to come out at that time and support the Eastern Ivy League school think tank type of people and Eastern Wall Street was that they realized that the country was in control of the military industrialists in the Southwest. And they had to call halt before the elections of 72, that no candidate who represented another side of a view could be nominated, he'd be killed. So we talked the first meeting about the exchange of power. And then on another broadcast, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about a war study in the Soviet Union breaking down the Vietnam sector and the nuclear rocket space sector. And 2 weeks later, this week, the Soviet Union has a map of the United States, and they break it into three areas. And who has the power of the eastern seaboard and the southwest and the middle area, which is not, Colorado and Wyoming and Minnesota, the northern states, Illinois, are not involved in this power play. It is a power play of the East Coast versus the Southwest Vietnam sector. And the section in the computer magazine is talking about the group who wanted to take the power away from the existing Southwest. And they were going to get to first take Diem's life, and then Bobby Baker, and then Lyndon Johnson. And the day that Kennedy was assassinated, on the floor of Congress, they were going to rip into Bobby Baker and link him, with Johnson. But the other group got wind of it, you see, and took the power, held the power, or took it and kept it from the Rand think type. It's a complicated, it really is an hour, and if anyone is interested, we'll talk about it for 1 hour, how the power almost did get into the other hands.
I think we should.
It is a complicated subject, but it involves the people controlling the government now, and why John Kennedy was killed and why Robert Kennedy was killed and why the Eastern Seaboard now wants the power back, and how are they going to get it? It's a revolution. March issue of American Opinion and John Birch Society has an article on the American Revolution and the think tanks. Rand will carry the revolution on one side, and the computer magazine that came out in July of this year is on that revolution. And the Soviet Union has lined up the sides of the revolution, figure from their side, and my research has lined it up, placing the people and in this country which positions and which sides they're on. So my research is accurate. The news is backing it out. The computer thing and the New York Times is coming through now, and they realize they've lost the power. The Eastern Seaboard has lost the power they had.
It's going to be difficult to decide which to do next week, May.
Well, if you want, if people are interested and want to call and want to pursue this line of thinking, it's technical now. It is not a broad thing. It's newsworthy. It's in the news every day. It involves the Pentagon Papers, the opening up to China, why they're there, what they're going to do with it, how to interpret it, and the news magazines coming out now, the Computer Magazine, American Opinion, and Nation, and others. It's all going to tie together. If they're interested, they want to call you.
If they are interested, you can call the station during the week, Monday through Friday from like 9 until 6 o'clock. And the number is 624-3859. And if you have any questions for May, call and ask, and I'll relate them to May, and then she will answer them on...
I'll call you back.
Oh, yes. All right. Then she will call you personally and talk to you about your question. Well, thank you again, May, for another...
Oh, it's... the hour goes too fast, Gloria.
It really does. It's just as though we just sat down. So we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Dialogue. Dialogue is a presentation of the Public Affairs and